Quite a few of you. Did you need another one? Can you pass that down? Anybody else? Oh, wow. Okay, get a couple more. Go ahead. Pass that down for me. I guess we'll go ahead and get started. The last time I checked, there was 1.6 million downloads of the VMware server software. And the feedback that we got back from our customers is that we really like your product, but we really like to know the tips and tricks of using it. My name is Kevin Gerke. I'm a product support engineer. I've been with VMware for 3 years. My main focus has been with the hosted products such as Server, GSX, Workstation, and Ace. My main goal today is to increase your knowledge about the VMware Server product. Let's see. Wish I had a clicker. So here's my agenda for today. I'm going to focus on three main areas. I'm going to talk about the VMware Server features. This includes some of the command line utilities that ship with the product. I'm also going to talk about the management user interface, the VMware Server configuration options. In this section, I'll give a brief introduction to the different types of virtual networking configurations, some suggestions on how you may want to use in your environment. I'll talk about how you can migrate physical machines and virtual machines from either VMware Server to Workstation, ESX. Also in this section, I'll talk about how you can migrate a Microsoft virtual machine to the VMware Server product. Like I said, one of the features of the VMware Server product is the management user interface. You can use a web browser from any remote PC. This does require that iOS is installed on your Windows host. On a Linux host, we actually install Apache web server for you. Also on a Linux host, it's a separate install package. On Windows host, it's actually included with the master install, but it is optional. You can use your web browser to control the virtual machines, such as powering on, powering off them. If you actually have the VMware Server console installed on a remote PC, you can launch that console and have it attached to a particular virtual machine. You can view the details about the virtual machine, such as the hardware configuration, users connected to it. You can disable or enable the SSL that's used for both the virtual machine console and the management user interface. You can download the virtual machine console if you don't have it installed on your remote PC using the web browser. And you can control the start order and the start and stop delay between each virtual machine. This comes in handy if you have, for example, a domain controller as one of your virtual machines. and you have either physical or virtual machines that require that domain controller to be up to be able to log in, you can set, make sure that virtual machine starts before the others get started. If you don't have the web-based management user interface installed either on your Windows host because you don't have IIS installed, or you decided not to install the MUI package on your Linux host, you can still take advantage of the start order and stop order of the virtual machines. This does require that you edit the global configuration file, and the global configuration file on a Windows host is in Documents and Settings, All Users, Application Data, VMware, VMware Server. And on Linux host, it's in SE VMware. It requires that you add two lines to that config file, auto start, default, start delay. And that number 300 is actually in seconds. So in this example, it's 5 minutes between the start of each virtual machine on boot up of the host. And we're also using a 5 minute delay in the stop order of the virtual machines when the host shuts down. The next file that you need to edit is the VMX file. The VMX file is the virtual machine configuration file. It's located in the directory where you created the virtual machine. The auto start equals power on. You can actually set that using the console by going up to VM settings, clicking on the options tab, and you can configure your virtual machine to power on when the host. What you can't do is set the start order. So if you want to set the start order, you will have to add those two lines to your VMX file. The auto start order equals 10 for the first virtual machine you want to start up. The second one would be 20. It's in multiples of 10. And the same applies for the stop order. So the first one you want to shut down would be 10. The second one would be 20, 30, etc. Here are some of the command line utilities that are included with the VMware Server product. First one is the Virtual Disk Manager. We'll talk more about that in the next slide. There's also the VMrun command, the VMware-CMD utility, and a very simple packet sniffer. There's one for Linux and also on the Windows that you can use for troubleshooting virtual networking issues that you may have. Here's some of the tasks that you can use the Virtual Disk Manager. You can create a virtual disk of a particular size and of a particular controller type. What I mean by this is there's virtual IDE and there's virtual SCSI disk. In virtual SCSI, there's two different types of controllers. There's bus logic, LSI logic. You can also specify the type of virtual disk. There's pre-allocated, global. We'll get into that more in the next slide. Pre-allocated, for example, if you created a pre-allocated 10 gig virtual disk, it's going to create a 10 gig file on your host and occupy all that space. Whereas the global disk will grow up to the max size of 10 gigs, for example, but will only occupy the amount of space that the data is inside that disk. You can also shrink a global disk. Over time, it will grow, but actually not occupy all that space. You can run a shrink and bring it back to the actual size of the data. You can use a VMware Disk Manager to convert from either a pre-allocated to a global, or vice versa. Like I said, if you make a global, you can reclaim the space by using the shrink option that's available. Let's say you created a 10 gigabyte virtual disk and then you decided that that's not big enough, you ran out of space. Unlike a physical disk, you can actually expand a virtual disk. You can also defrag the virtual disk from the command line using this utility, and also we talked about shrinking. There are four different types of virtual disks. There's a single global virtual disk, which is a type 0. Then we have a global that you can split into 2 gig files. There's a type 2, which is a pre-allocated virtual disk, and a type 3, which is a pre-allocated broken up into 2 gig files. I put up a couple examples here. This is an example of creating a virtual disk. The dash C option is to create, the dash S is the size, dash A is the adapter type, and the dash T is the types that are defined up above there, and then the name of the virtual disk that you want to create. At any time, you can just type VMware vDisk Manager at the command line. It will give you the usage and also include some examples. The bottom example is converting from one type of virtual disk to another. In this example, it was a pre-allocated, and it's converting it to a single global virtual disk. Again, you can expand the virtual disk. Keep in mind that this actually only expands the virtual disk. You still have the guest partition, so you need to use some third-party utility like Partition Magic. There's some Partition Magic clones for Linux that are free that you can download, but it just actually expands the virtual disk itself and not the partition. Next is the vmrun command. This utility can actually be run from one VMware server against another VMware server, so there's some authentication flags, such as specifying the host name, the port. Typically the port is 902, username, password to log into that other server. Here's some of the options available for it. The one that I think most customers look forward to using is the snapshot. If any of you used GSX in the past, there was no command line utility to take a snapshot. That was kind of a number one to have on the wish list. The example at the bottom there is actually taking a snapshot. And one thing I wanted to point out is that the path to the VMX file, since it contains spaces in the path, it's inside quotes. So if your path to your VMX file contains spaces, you do need to put inside quotes. Here's some tips for using the vmrun command. You can get a list of all your virtual machines that are running on the VMware server. In a development environment, QA environment, QA could take a snapshot of the virtual machine before applying the application that they're going to test. There should be a problem. The QA could just zip up the whole virtual machine directory, ship it off to the developer. Then they could revert the snapshot and go back to the base like the application was never installed and get ready to test the next application. You could also, from a script, automate the snapshot of all virtual machines before applying any Microsoft updates. Sometimes there's issues with the Windows updates conflicting with other applications you may have installed. You could also automate the revert or deletion of a snapshot that you've taken. There's also the VMware-CMD utility. This kind of a leftover from the GSX. It's still included with the VMware server. It has a lot of the same functionality as the VMrun does. The most common use for it is to suspend your virtual machines while you make a backup and then use it to resume the virtual machine. If you create a batch file using this utility and there's multiple virtual machines that you want to suspend, notice I put the call in front of VMware CMD. This is so that the first execution of the VMware-CMD, if that call wasn't, statement wasn't there, it would exit out of your batch file and not execute the rest of them. So you want to make sure you use call in front. And again, if your path to your VMX file contains spaces, you want to put it inside quotes. There's also a very simple packet sniffer that's included with the VMware server. It's actually called VMnet-Sniffer on a Linux host and VNet-Sniffer on a Windows host. Don't ask me why. There are other packet sniffers out there, free ones like Ethereal, I guess now they call it Wireshark, that you could use, get more details. But there's a couple of examples of the usage, and you specify the virtual switch. And we'll talk about virtual switches later on when we get into the virtual networking portion. There is a separate package that you can install on your remote PCs to connect to your virtual machines to manage them, to use them hands-on access. You can power on, power off, interact with the guest OS. There are two separate packages for this. There's one for Windows, one for Linux. And the Windows package actually includes the COM scripting API, the Perl API, and the new, I believe they call it now, VIX API. It was called the C API. And again, there's one for Linux. That one, of course, doesn't include the COM scripting because that only applies to Windows, but it does include the Perl and the new VIX API. There's other ways of connecting to your virtual machines. You could use the Microsoft Remote Desktop to connect. I do recommend that you connect directly to the virtual machine and not to the host. The problem with that is that some users connect to the host and they turn around and then they launch the console. Both of them are trying to take control of the keyboard and mouse, and you can end up with a mouse that goes crazy or a black screen. So I recommend if you do use this, connect directly to the guest. If you have no other choice, I have found though there's two modes when you use the console. There's if you're actually on the GSX or the VMware server host itself, there's a local mode and there's a remote mode. The remote mode will prompt you for a host name, a username, a password. So if you do have to use this method to connect to the host, I recommend you use the remote mode. Enter the, you know, you can just put localhost for the host name, your username, password. That seems to work around the conflict with the screen. Another method which you can use to connect to your virtual machines is a VNC client. There is a VNC server built into the product. But this does require that you edit the virtual machine configuration file. Again, this is the VMX file. Just open it up in a text editor and add remote display.vnc enables equals true. By default, the VNC uses port 5900, but you can specify your own port number. Also, I recommend that you assign a unique port number for each virtual machine that you have running on your server. And you can use a port range from 5900 to 5999 there.
Why?
What's that?
Why?
That's just so that each user, you know, is accessing their own virtual machine. You can specify a password. And again, this requires that you edit the VMX file for the virtual machine. Here's the option that you would put in the config file. A couple things to keep in mind when using the VNC client, though, that the password is only 8 characters. It's not encrypted, so all the actual client traffic, other than the password, is unencrypted across the network. So I do recommend you use the console if you're worried about the security. Of course, since you only see the desktop of the guest OS, you're not able to, you know, take advantage of snapshots like you would using a console. You can't change the power state, like powered on, powered off. You won't be able to copy and paste between the host and the guest. Let's see what else. It does require that you have the VMware tools installed in the virtual machine. On a Windows host, the VMware server does log some events to the Windows event logs. Some users like this, some users don't like this. So the first option there, eventlog.win.message, that equals false. If that's such a false, that prevents the login of all the dialog boxes and messages you might see when using the product. And the second option there, eventlog-win-register equals false, that prevents the logging to the Windows event log if you power on the virtual machine, power off, suspend it. If you do want them to be keep track for auditing purposes, you can set these to true. I believe the default is true. You can migrate physical machines to the VMware server. We have a new utility out called the VMware Converter Utility. We used to have what's called P2V, and then we had a importer, and it actually combined the functionality of those two tools into one. So that can be used to migrate a physical machine into a virtual machine to run on your VMware server. There are other methods of doing a physical to virtual migration. There's a company called PlateSpin. They make. We have a white paper on other methods. You can use Ghost. The only problem with just ghosting a physical machine and then putting a virtual machine is there is hardware differences between your physical box and what's in a virtual machine. So you can, for example, if you have a physical box that's using an IDE drive, you try to restore that ghost image into a virtual machine that's using a SCSI. Maybe it's using bus logic or LSI, and you don't have the drivers installed in an image. It's Windows, it's just got a blue screen on you, and it's not going to boot up. So what the converter utility does is actually goes in and makes all the registry changes and everything for you so that it will boot up when you migrate it over. You can use the importer to take a Microsoft virtual PC or Microsoft server virtual machine over the VMware server. In the importer, you can make what's called a full copy or a linked clone. The difference between those two, a full copy is just basically taking an image of that original virtual machine in Microsoft and creating a new virtual machine using that image. No dependency on the original. Whereas a link clone, that actually still uses the base disk, but we add a second, it's kind of like a snapshot, a second disk. So any changes that you make are actually written to the second disk and the first Microsoft third extension for the virtual disk is VHD. We don't modify it. So you could take that virtual disk and bring it back over to Microsoft and run it over there if you need to. You can also take your virtual machines that you created on VMware Server and migrate them over to ESX. One of the requirements on ESX is that they only use SCSI virtual disks. So there is a knowledge base article, 1881, that gives instructions on how to convert a virtual disk, a virtual IDE disk to a virtual SCSI disk. For example, when you create a new virtual machine, on the VMware server, and it's an XP. The default that it picks for the virtual disk is IDE. So if you wanted to take that XP virtual machine and migrate over to ESX, you would have to convert it. Also, if you create a virtual machine on VMware server, it is compatible with Workstation 5.x, so you can just bring it over to Workstation if you have it. If you create a virtual machine on VMware server, it's not compatible with Workstation 4.x, GSX, because of the difference in the virtual hardware. One of the options you could do is make a ghost of your virtual machine and then restore it in the virtual machine that you made on one of those products. Here's some best practices for backing up virtual machines. We don't recommend that you back up your virtual machine while it's running. If you do, it can hang the virtual machine. If you do have a virtual machine, it needs to be up 24 hours, 7 days a week. We recommend you install a backup agent inside the virtual machine. This is where the utility like the VMware CMD or the VMRun utility comes in handy, because you can use that to suspend the virtual machine from either from a pre-backup script and resume it from a post-backup script. I'm going to get into talking about different options of how to secure your virtual machines regarding networking, but before I did that, the most common question that support gets is the different virtual machine networking options that are available, how they work. There seems to be a lot of confusion over that. So I wanted to give a brief introduction to the virtual networking. I wanted to start off with the bridge option. On the left-hand side of the screen there, we have the virtual network adapter. That's in your virtual machine. In the center there, we have a virtual switch called VMNet Zero. In the bottom right corner there is the actual physical network adapter in your host. They're both connected to this virtual switch by means of the VMware Bridge protocol on a Windows host. It's actually, you'll see it in the properties of the physical network adapter. On a Linux host, you'll see it in the process status. There's also NAT networking. Again, you have your virtual Ethernet adapter in your virtual machine, and you have another virtual switch. This time it's called VMNet 8. VMNet 8 does provide a DHCP server. It also provides the NAT service. And there's also, it gets installed in the host, there's a virtual network adapter called VMNet 8. The other option is host only, and this gets its name because it only allows communications between the host and the virtual machine or the guest OS. The previous slide, NAT, the virtual machine can communicate to the outside world, like you can use your browser, but systems on the outside cannot access. The first slide, their bridge, typically on the same subnet as the host or the guest, can be accessed from the outside, and also the guest can access machines on the outside. The other thing I wanted to mention is that one of the big confusions that come into play is the virtual switch there, in this case is VMNet 1. The virtual network adapter that gets installed in the host is also called VMNet 1. This is the virtual machine editor. To get to this, you bring up the console, go to VM settings, brings up this dialog box. It lists the virtual hardware, the virtual machine. You click on the, in this case, this virtual machine happens to have two virtual network adapters, but the first one there is highlighted, and it's set to bridge. What this is really doing when you set to bridge is it's connecting, it's telling the virtual machine adapter what virtual switch to connect to. So if I set bridge, by default it's going to connect to the virtual network adapter to that virtual switch VM.0. If I select NAT, we're actually connecting this virtual network adapter to VM.8. Host only, we're going to be connecting this virtual network adapter to the virtual switch VM.1. The last option, custom, you can actually specify which virtual switch you want this virtual machine to connect to. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the next slide, I believe. This is actually the host settings. The previous screen was the virtual machine network settings. This is the host virtual network mappings. Again, on the left-hand side there, we have the list of the virtual switches, VM.0 through 9. So you have a total of 10 virtual switches on a Windows host. Linux host, you have 0 through 99. By default, VM.1 and VM.8 are already defined. VM.1, again, is the host only, so that virtual switch is already connected to an adapter. The virtual switch VM.8 is already hooked to the virtual network adapter in the host called VM.8. Kind of like the virtual machine editor, this is telling the switch what physical adapter to connect to on the host side. So we've already, on the virtual machine side, we told the virtual machine to connect to VM.0. On this side, we're telling the virtual switch, VM.0, what physical adapter on the host we want to connect to, not what virtual network adapter in the virtual machine. If you have more than one physical network adapter in the host, you can specify which physical adapter on the host you want VM.0 virtual switch to use by using that drop-down menu. You could also specify a second network adapter dedicated to your virtual machines. For example, you could use VM.2, and if you did have more than one physical network adapter in your host, you would see that in the drop-down menu. On a Linux host, there is no graphical user interface that, like you just saw, so you do need to run the VMware config.pl script to make any networking changes on the host. This example here is we're going to modify the bridge. One tip here is when they ask you what editor to use, select the editor option instead of the wizard option. In this example, where it's asking you which virtual network you wish to configure, that really should say which virtual switch do you wish to configure. In this case, we're saying 0. Or VM.0, excuse me. Verifying that we do want to modify it. In this particular example, there was two physical network adapters on the host. There was an ATH0, ATH1. So in this example, we're going to bridge the virtual switch VM.0 to the physical adapter ATH1 on the host. You can dedicate a physical adapter by using methods I described, dedicated only to the virtual machines, so your virtual machines can be on a separate subnet other than what the host is, to make it maybe a little bit more secure environment. So in this example, the host has two physical network adapters. The second one is being used in a bridge configuration for the virtual machines. you want to make it even a little bit more secure on a Linux host, you could remove the IP address from the physical adapter, the second one there, so to keep the host isolated. On a Windows host, you could go into the properties of the physical network adapter and move all the Microsoft protocols, just leaving the VMware Bridge protocol. Here's another example how you can make your virtual machines more secure. In this example, the virtual machine on the right-hand side there is a web server. It relies on a database, an app server, application server. The first virtual machine, the web server itself, actually has two virtual network adapters. One that's bridge connect to a physical network adapter. The second virtual network adapter that you see is actually connected up to a virtual switch VNet 2 that wasn't bridged or connected to any host only or NAT. It's just a virtual switch. So those three virtual machines can communicate over that virtual switch there, and they're isolated because there's no router in the first virtual machine to route traffic between those two. You could also use a similar configuration where that first virtual machine could actually be a firewall or some router. Another method of making your host more secure is when you're using a remote console. Most people know that it uses port 902, so if you did want to change that, you could specify a different port on the host. This is in the global configuration file. It's in documents and settings, all users, application data, VMware, VMware server. And the parameter you add is just authd.port and then the port number that you'd like to use. There is also the client side. For the clients, you'd also need to change the port number that they use when connecting to the VMware server. Again, this is a global file. It's located in document settings, all users, application data, VMware virtual machine console. There you put authd.client.port number and specify the port number that you like to use. You can also change the port number if you're not using a Windows host, you're using Linux host. There you need to edit the VMware authd configuration file located in etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/etc/ the off-beat port. Again, on the client side, for a Linux client, if you're using a Linux client to connect, you can specify the port number there. One of the things you can do on the VMware Server product that you can't do on Workstation or is to set up clustering between two virtual machines. And here I just wanted to cover some of the tips on when setting up clustering. It does require that the virtual disk be virtual SCSI disk. We also recommend that you add a second SCSI controller in the virtual machine and use your data disk and quorum disk to be on that bus. For example, which is separate from the OS. So if your operating system typically will be on SCSI bus 0, we recommend that the shared disk be on SCSI bus 1 or 2, whatever your choice. We also recommend that you use the virtual disks that use pre-allocated. And also, to take advantage of clustering, you do need to enable SCSI reservations. And to do this, you need to edit the virtual machine configuration file, again, the VMX file, and add in this case, we're using SCSI controller that's on bus 1, so SCSI 1.sharedbus=virtual. Also, in addition to the SCSI reservations, you also have to turn off locking, which prevents two virtual machines from accessing the same virtual disk. And to turn off the disk locking, you edit the VMX file, disk.locking equals false. And this is something that wasn't required on GSX, if you're familiar with that product. There was the that was replaced by VMware Server. You do also need to add this extra line in here to turn off the disk caching on any shared disk. Should you have an issue with VMware Server, I just wanted to cover where the log files are that you should collect to look at to either troubleshoot your own issue, or if you need to get VMware technical support involved to help you troubleshoot your issue. These are some of the log files that will come in handy to troubleshoot. Also submit to VMware technical support to help them. There's the console, and that's on a Windows host. It's in the user's profile bar under the local settings temp. There'll be a file, or directory, VMware-username, and under that directory there'll be VMware- the user's name. PID is the process ID of the console that was running. There's a location on Linux host. If you do have an issue with the management user interface, there's where you can find a log file for that. There is under program files, VMware management interface, there's a MUI.log. On the Linux host, it's in varlog. And also the virtualmachine.log file, that's also located in the directory where the virtual machine was created. So if you're having a, for example, a virtual machine that won't power on, you want to submit the log file. Also, something I didn't put up there, it's also probably be handy, is to submit the configuration file for your virtual machine also. There are different online resources that you can find additional information, anything that maybe I didn't cover today that you're hoping I would. There's a product documentation. There's also a knowledge base. We also have a bunch of white papers on different configurations, how-tos. And the last option there is the VMware Community Discussion Forums. This is a forum that other users like yourself, there's also VMware employees that do participate on occasional. I happen to be in there quite often answering customer questions, helping them troubleshoot issues. And the last thing I'd like to do is open up for any questions that you may have. Go ahead.
On virtual networking, if you have a GSX host with four NICs, and I make a virtual switch with two of those NICs, and they're a gig each, first question is, what's my speed for virtual?
Well, I can't answer on the GSX side, but the bridging part of it, the actual transfer from the virtual machine network adapter to your physical adapter, is as fast as the host can get CPU cycles to transfer that data. And then, you know, if you have a gigabyte physical network adapter, then you're going to get, you know, hopefully a gigabyte transfer rate on your local network. Any other questions? You back there?
Yeah.
It actually shows you all the list of the running virtual machines. Yeah. You in the back there?
Yeah, best practices. When first setting up your VM, is it recommended to put it in their own individual folders?
Yeah, they should be in their own individual folders,
so
yes.
They just go into VMware?
Well, actually, it should, it defaults to a default directory. I think on Linux host is varlive, VMware, virtual machines. But yeah, they should have their own separate directory.
Also with the VMDK file?
You typically go to the VMDK, the VMX file, all those files that make up that particular virtual machine should be in their own directory or folder.
So if you're putting them on the same, you want to follow that same best practice?
Yes. Yeah. Any other questions?
Cool.
Yeah, the slides are going to be available. Also, this has been recorded, so we would get access to that. Any other questions? You back there? Okay. We actually support whatever your host supports as far as storage, because the host just sees the virtual disk simply as files. Okay, I mean, we're not talking about physical or raw disk, we're just talking about virtual disk. So the host just simply sees them as files, so it can be on a SAN, NAS, you know.
Is that what you meant? You mean there's a recommended document somewhere, but not running server on a host that is acting as a domain controller? Yeah, that's. Oh, okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. Yeah, we don't recommend that. There's some weird artifact that results from that. I don't know exactly how to help.
Yeah, there's an OSP. I don't remember off the top of my head, but you have a slide there. Actually, there's in VMware Center, it's called Nick Morrison. Yeah, so just by installing the VMware tools, you take advantage of the VMware accelerated AMD PCINet card. You have the hat? Well, VLAN tagging isn't supported. The ESX does actually can look at the tagging. But if you have a trunking come into your host, VLAN trunk, and your particular VLAN software allows you to create virtual VLAN network adapters, you could, in the virtual machine, bridge each virtual machine to a separate virtual VLAN network adapter. That's the only way I know getting around that. But no, that's I think that's an ESX. Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Any other questions? Well, thank you for coming. Hopefully I addressed some of your questions today. Thank you.